This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Heathens, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is July 13, 13. Free Thought Radio is broadcasting in Madison, Wisconsin. Free Thought Radio is also broadcast in California and in New York, many places in New York, in Michigan and in Missouri. And of course, we podcast to the known and unknown universe.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We have over 19,000 members. We have all kinds, we can welcome all kinds of new members who joined, signed up from our ad campaign on July 4th, our Godless, Celebrate Our Godless Constitution campaign running in 25 newspapers, notably Chicago Tribune, LA Times, Seattle Times, and the New York Times.
And it played in Peoria.
It played in Peoria. It got censored in Oklahoma City, home of Hobby Lobby. And we were actually countering the annual disinformation ad by Hobby Lobby that portrays the United States as based on God and Jesus. And so that was unfortunate censorship. But so welcome to all the new members of FFRF.
Coming up on the second half of today's show, we're going to talk with Jerry Coyne again. He's the professor of biology at the University of Chicago and the author of, in free thought science circles, the best-selling book called Why Evolution is True. He's an intrepid blogger, and we're going to chew over some of the continuing saga at Ball State University in Indiana, where the Freedom From Religion Foundation has a long-standing complaint about proselytizing being done by a science professor, and where they've just hired a known creationist to join in their astronomy department. Jerry Coyne is one of FFRF's honorary directors.
And we'll be talking about Ireland and state-church separation there. Dan and I just got back from an Atheist Ireland conference.
It's nice to be back in a country where we literally drive on the right side of the road.
Yeah, we took some vacation time after that conference, and Dan was the brave driver. And we learned a lot about the Catholic Church's role there in banning abortion, even to save women's lives. And we're also going to talk about the threats by the religious right here at home, including how the anti-abortion crusade is hitting home here in Wisconsin. But before all that sobering news, how about a little humor? June 17th is the birthday of comedian Phyllis Diller.
Phyllis Diller was a woman pioneer in stand-up comedy who made a career out of her self-deprecating humor. She was born in 1917, and she died last summer at the age of 95 after living what she called a happy and fulfilled life. Phyllis Diller was talking with John Palmer on his show Encore about a secular self-help book that she found very useful.
That got to me because it didn't involve God or anybody else. Just me and each person.
And making yourself a better person.
Use your mind. Use your thoughts. Use them. Don't throw them away. Just don't let them lie there.
So she was an atheist for most of her life and said kindness was her religion. In an interview with ANU magazine from November 2001, Phyllis Diller said, "Religion is such a medieval idea. Don't get me started. I have thought about every facet of religion and I can't buy any of it."
When Rosie O'Donnell asked Phyllis Diller what she thought about the book The Secret, Phyllis replied that she could do without all the religion. She prefers to read books that are entirely secular.
I didn't want to stop and bother with God.
Right.
I just wanted the magic.
Yeah, I understand. Take what works for you.
So Rosa even acknowledged, some non-believers, we take what works for us, and what works for us is free thought.
Dan and I just got back from a week in Ireland, starting with that conference in Dublin hosted by Atheist Ireland, and abortion was the big topic because of the ban on abortion in the Republic of Ireland.
Just last week, while we were there in Ireland, the Irish Parliament preliminarily voted in favor of the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Bill, referring to saving the pregnant woman's life. Believe it or not, this remains controversial in Ireland. We flew back Saturday, so we missed the huge anti-abortion demonstration in Dublin, which unfortunately attracted some 35,000 faith heads who think it's okay if women die unnecessarily during pregnancy. Atheist Ireland and other secularists and feminists counter-picketed that rally. There were about 1,000 of them in Dublin. And Jane Donnelly, who's with Atheist Ireland, sent us a little video footage of the pro-choice demonstrators being impressively loud as they shouted, "Shame on you," to the antis.
So the bill is the weakest possible response to the shocking, brutal death late last October of a woman named Savita Halappanavar. She was a dentist with the misfortune to be living in Galway, Ireland, 17 weeks into a wanted pregnancy that went wrong. Savita, of course, was from India, and had this happened in India, she'd be alive today. She started to miscarry. And under Amendment 8 of the Irish Constitution, passed in 1983, fetal life is put on par with the woman's right to life. And the way that is works in practice is fetal life is put above the woman's life. The Galway hospital, where this dentist ended up, refused to abort her pregnancy until there was no detectable fetal heartbeat, even though her uterus was rupturing. Savita and her husband pleaded to end her doomed pregnancy. They refused to do so until it was too late. Blood poisoning had set in, and she died.
In 1992, in the landmark Irish X case, it's called X because they didn't reveal her name, a 14-year-old girl who was pregnant from rape was barred by the government from traveling to Britain to have a legal abortion. She had threatened to kill herself if not permitted to end that pregnancy. A 4-1 ruling by the Irish Supreme Court was issued, allowing her to travel to Britain for the abortion, establishing the right to abortion in Ireland if the pregnant woman's life is at risk because of pregnancy, including the risk of suicide. X ended up miscarrying in an English hospital, which clouded the precedent of that court ruling.
And these outrages in Catholic-controlled countries just keep happening. Excuse me, you may have seen the news last week. Outrageous news surfacing that a pregnant 11-year-old girl, a fifth grader, raped in Chile over the course of 2 years by her mother's partner, is being denied an abortion there. This arch-conservative, arch-Catholic country admits no exception of its abortion ban. And Irish women have really been in reproductive hell, thanks to the Catholic doctrine. Contraception was only legalized in Ireland in 1985, and this was over the vociferous campaigning of the Catholic Church. And today, 4,000 to 5,000 Irish women routinely fly over to Britain or elsewhere to get abortion care if they have the funds and connections. And it was nice, Dan, at the end of our conference, you and I and Taslima Nazrin and other feminists and Atheist Ireland directors attended a fundraiser. It was a stand-up comedy show and raising funds for an Irish organization that collects funds to aid women in Ireland to travel to Britain for the purpose of a legal abortion. But right now, the abortion rights campaign in Ireland is focused very narrowly on amending things so to make sure that women don't die, women like Savita.
Does that fundraiser remind you of something?
Well, I'll get to that. So when we got back, we just got back basically late Saturday night and came back to work on Monday. And boy, did I have a terrible case of deja vu, because I got to work and learned that abortion clinics in our state of Wisconsin had been shut down as of that morning. While we were away in Ireland, Wisconsin's aggressively reactionary governor signed an anti-abortion bill a week ago Friday, requiring that abortion physicians must have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of a clinic. And this effectively shut down two of Wisconsin's four abortion clinics. We don't have many clinics, and women have to drive long distances in Wisconsin. And this is very close to home. My mother, Ann Gaylor, who's the principal founder of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, is 86 now, and she remains the volunteer administrator of the Women's Medical Fund charity that helps to pay for abortion care. It's helped to pay for more than 20,000 women in the state of Wisconsin get abortion care, women without means. And she had patients with upcoming appointments at the shuttered Milwaukee Clinic, the affiliated medical services. And we were on the phone wondering, do we need to call these women and direct them to a Chicago clinic? It was just like the bad old days. And for many of these indigent women, this would just be an insuperable barrier.
National Planned Parenthood and Milwaukee's affiliated medical services had filed a challenge as soon as that law was signed July 5th, and a federal judge, whose bio described him as from a large Irish Catholic family, had set the hearing date for an injunction as late as July the 15th.
And so we were all in great suspense. You know, was he going to hold an emergency teleconference? Well, you know, was he going to wait another, keep abortion clinics closed for 2 weeks? And fortunately, by noon Monday, the judge, Connolly, announced that he would be having a hearing about it. And by Friday night or Monday night, he had issued a temporary restraining order, a strong 19-page ruling granting the injunction and noting there is a troubling lack of justification for the hospital admitting privileges requirements. And now this was all but what we talked about in Ireland, my opening remarks at the conference there about empowering women through secularism. I decided to talk about the circumstances in Wisconsin in the early 1970s with abortion that ultimately led to the creation of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We had a ban somewhat analogous to Ireland's ban, and it was witnessing the role of religion, particularly that of the Catholic Church, in legislating its dogma into our civil laws that woke my mother and I up to the dangers of religion controlling government. And in that speech, I recalled this terrible time in 1971 when the Roman Catholic district attorney here in Dane County, Madison, Wisconsin, illegally raided Wisconsin's first lawfully open abortion clinic. It had been open about 3 weeks after a federal court ruling in 1970 overturned our criminal law. And the sheriffs forced their way into the clinic, absconded with the records of 300 pending appointments, took into custody the 17-year-old patient whose feet were in stirrups when they burst into the examining room, and hundreds of us swelled into the city-county building to protest this tyrannical act. And my mother was brought in to help women. Women died because of this. And it was the beginning of the Women's Medical Fund because she raised money to send women to travel to New York. And so these assaults are continuing.
At the state level, assaults on abortion rights, with 43 restrictions adopted this year to date, according to the Guttmacher Institute. The U.S. House passed a ban on abortion after 20 weeks. The few abortions at this point are limited to extreme cases.
And, you know, that should die in the Senate and, of course, would be vetoed by Obama. But what a commentary that the House could command such a vote. And challenges are ongoing of bans at 6 and 12 weeks in North Dakota and Arkansas, respectively.
We'll talk in the future about
it. Oh, and Texas, despite State Representative Wendy Davis's heroic filibustering, is hell-bent on passing its own version of Wisconsin's law that would shut down nearly every clinic in that state.
We're going to talk about the merging of Catholic and public hospitals in the future show. Our attorney, Andrew Seidel, is working with an intern, Charles Rosloff, about the state of Washington.
And where Washington residents are threatened with not being able to get any of these services that are barred by the Catholic Church. In some 50% of hospital beds will be controlled by the Catholic Church because of mergers. And you can find out more at ffrf.org/news. So Monday's scare here in Wisconsin is a wake-up call showing how close we are to losing reproductive rights in the United States under the relentless campaigning of the religious lobbies and their right-wing political allies. So my question is, does the Pope rule Wisconsin and Ireland and Texas and Chile and you name it?
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio. After the break, we'll talk with Jerry Coyne about why evolution is true.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie.
And before the break, Annie Laurie, you were talking about your mom's group, the Women's Medical Fund.
Mm-hmm. And I'm secretary. It's an all-volunteer 501c3 charity that has helped more than 20,000 women without means, mostly in the state of Wisconsin, pay for abortion care.
How can people help?
Well, we need your help. She likes to say pure as ivory soap. I think a lot purer, actually. Where 99%+ of the money goes to pay for abortions for poor women. So it really is a pure charity. And it's tax exempt for contributors. And you can send your check to the Women's Medical Fund. Women's Medical Fund, P.O. Box 248. That's an easy one to remember, 248. Madison, Wisconsin, 53701. Madison 53701. And help women. A typical allotment is about $200, and women come up with the rest.
Before we talk with Jerry Coyne at the second half of the show, let's have a change of pace. It's summertime, and the living is easy. The song Summertime is from the musical Porgy and Bess, written by George and Ira Gershwin, who were both non-believers. Here's a version of the original orchestration sung by the New Zealand singer Kiri Te Kanawa. And that's Kiri Te Kanawa. She's Maori from New Zealand, singing the George and Ira Gershwin song, Summertime.
And yet another example of the contributions of secularists and non-believers to the arts. And I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio. We're going to talk with Jerry Coyne. We've had him on the show before.
University of Chicago prof.
And author of the book, Why Evolution is True, and the blog, Why Evolution is True.
And which is very assertive on state church issues. He's an honorary officer of FFRF and helping us with a controversy in Indiana. So stay tuned to learn more about that.
There's a professor at Ball State who's pushing creationism in the science class.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're back to talk with Jerry Coyne, as we've been promising you. And Jerry is an author. He's a professor of biology. He's pretty well known for his constant commenting on the intelligent design debate. He's a prolific scientist. I called his phone at his office, and it said, if I'm not here to answer the phone, I'm out doing science somewhere. He's published dozens of papers. He's currently a professor at the University of Chicago in the Department of Ecology and Evolution, or as they say, Ecology and Evolution over in Britain. His concentration is speciation and ecological evolutionary genetics, especially dealing with the fruit fly. He's the author of the best-selling science popular book called Why Evolution is True, and he maintains a website by the same name. You can go to Why Evolution is True and look for that. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Jerry.
Good to be here.
So you're not in Chicago right now. You're in Las Vegas for the Amazing Conference?
The Amazing Meeting, yes, the annual sort of Randy Foundation meeting. It's just started, so I haven't seen much, but it promises to be a good one.
And you're talking there?
Yeah, I'm giving a speech on the incompatibility of science and religion. That would be Saturday afternoon.
So that's, you told me earlier that that's sort of the major topic of a new book that you just started working on. Are religion and science compatible?
Yeah, I mean, that's not the title. I'm using over the title. That's sort of the last thing to be decided. But yes, that's definitely the topic. It's going to take me about a year to write it, so don't look for it at your bookstores anytime soon.
But have you made up your mind yet?
Oh, about the incompatibility? Yeah. I think anybody who knows me knows the answer to that question. So.
Well, we'll look forward to it.
Sorry?
We'll look forward to it.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, we thought it was time to have you on to talk about something that you have done a lot of very important blogging about, which is this controversy at Ball State University in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And maybe you want to tell the story.
Well, you're referring to both Eric Heaton and Guillermo Gonzalez?
Yes.
Well, I'll try to be brief. I was informed by somebody, one of my readers, my blog readers, who's in that area, that a student had complained to her that he or she, I don't want to identify the sex, was taking a science class in which the professor was proselytizing for Christianity constantly and teaching intelligent design, which, as we know, is creationism in a cheap tuxedo. Mm-hmm. And so the informant sent me, which is public information, the syllabus of this course by Eric Heaton, which I think is called The Boundaries of Science. And it's a science course. The students get science credit for it. But I was pretty appalled because it was all Christian apologetics, basically, and intelligent designs. There were books by Michael Behe and Stephen Meyer, the well-known culprits of the Discovery Institute. There was even a book by C.S. Lewis, and then of the three textbooks, there were two of them were religious, one by Christian, that had cross on the cover, one by Orthodox Jew, and then another textbook, which nobody would read because it was, although secular, it was extremely complicated. And there were no books by physicists or scientists who claim that there's no evidence for God in the universe. People like Richard Dawkins, Lawrence Krauss, Victor Stenger, Sean Carroll. So it was a one-sided thing, and the student was complaining because that student was a non-believer and was offended by the constant proselytization by Professor Heaton in the class. So I basically wrote to the chairman of he, Eden's department, which is astronomy and physics at Ball State, and said, hey, you know, this is going on in your department. Here's the syllabus. It seems to violate the Constitution because it's religious proselytizing in a science class at a public university. You might want to look into it. And shortly thereafter, I got an email back from the chairman, which was rather brusque, just basically said, look, this syllabus was approved by the university. We don't have any problem with what Professor Heaton is doing. It gives the students an opportunity for open-minded discussion of the topic. Of course, it didn't, because it was only one side of the view presented, that science shows evidence for God. So at that point, I gave up and reported it to you guys, the FFRF, and you know, the rest is history. I have no leverage with Ball State University. You apparently did.
Andrew Seidel was the attorney who
right. Andrew wrote a letter which he sent me to Ball State, copied to every big mocker there, the provost, the president, and stuff, and saying that this is going on. And it was shortly thereafter that they decided to have an investigation of the course at Professor Heaton. I think they appointed a 5-person panel to study the issue.
Well, we just got confirmation that a panel of 4 professors is investigating the claim that astronomy professor Eric Heiden is misusing his teaching to proselytize.
So, yeah, I thought there was one other person off campus.
There's 4 professors and someone else.
Okay.
But it's taken a long time, really. I mean, this.
To do the investigation?
Well, to get all of this, to get somewhere.
Well, actually, I thought it was remarkably short. I mean, I don't know how this stuff works because I'm not, you know, involved in legal stuff.
Well, you're dealing in millions of years of evolutionary time, so.
Yeah, that's right. So I've been told sub rosa that, you know, it's not going to be much longer before they make a decision. But yesterday, Ball State, one of the spokespersons, I can't remember her name, said Ball State does not think intelligent design should be taught in science courses.
Well, I guess that we should say hallelujah.
Yeah.
So the issue here,
if they hold by that statement, that's a pretty clear indication of how this case is going to come out, I think.
So you're not necessarily objecting to the idea of a class like this. It seems sort of like a interdisciplinary, more like philosophy rather than straight science. But we are objecting to is this particular professor abusing that class to push his own religious views.
Well, I am sort of objecting to the way the class is run. I mean, some of my readers have said, well, just move it over to philosophy or religion departments. But if you look at the content, it's still a one-sided course that proselytizes Christianity. I don't think such a course is appropriate even as a religion or philosophy course because it's unbalanced and it basically pushes a certain form of religion in a public university. So if it's going to be an appropriate course, Heaton has to, I've got to say, I don't know how his name is pronounced.
Andrew today told me, Andrew Seidel told me it's like Heiden.
Heiden, okay. So I'm not sure, the course is unbalanced, so I think Heiden would continue to proselytize Christianity. I mean, the famous statement he made in the science class is one of his students who was an atheist said, well, how do you know the Christian God made the universe, which is what he was teaching the students. And he responded sort of snarkily, well, it's not like some Hindu monkey god could have done it. I mean,
yeah, he's far out.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I called him a kook. I felt a little bit bad about that, but upon second thoughts, I mean, somebody that does that is a kook. You know?
Well, and he's had all of these students at his mercy.
That's
here they
true.
Are depending on him for their grade, and they go to officials and nobody does anything, and they're filling out their evaluations, and those were very clear.
Yeah, and it's not yet clear, you know, whether those evaluations are actually read by anybody or the ratemyprofessors.com stuff was, but they should pay attention now, that's for sure.
Well, you've been very, very helpful in publicizing all this because you've done so many blogs on it, and we wanted to get your response on what we thought was a very bogus rejoinder that somehow this involved academic freedom.
Yeah, I mean, academic freedom, I think, is a concept that's misunderstood by even academics. I mean, bloggers like P.Z. Myers and Larry Moran, who are, you know, respected bloggers, have defended Hayden again? I forget.
Yeah, Hayden.
Hayden, okay. Have defended him by saying, well, it's academic freedom. The professor has the right to teach whatever he or she wants in the classroom. But that's not what academic freedom is all about. It's a freedom to pursue research on what you want. It's not a freedom to teach anything you want to a student. Because if you take that to its limit, you could teach homeopathy in a medical school class or astrology in a psychology class as a theory of human behavior. I mean, a professor does not have a right at any university to teach whatever he or she wants in their class. There are certain scholarly standards that have to be adhered to. If you don't adhere to them, you're subject to sanctions by the higher administration.
And academic freedom necessarily requires academic responsibility. You have a responsibility to present the best information in that field that you're teaching.
Yeah, absolutely. And intelligent design is not the best information about, you know, either natural history or cosmology. So, and I should add that, you know, there is no provision for academic freedom enshrined in the Constitution, as the First Amendment is. So, you know, it certainly is subsidiary to what Hayden was doing, which was proselytizing Christianity in his class.
I remember looking at the syllabus to that class, and it struck me. You would think that a class about the boundaries of science, the very first item in that list should have been the Dover decision, that Kitzmiller decision where the issue was tried in a court of law. It's wonderful reading. I think that decision should be required reading in science classes.
Absolutely. But, you know, Hayden isn't going to present that. There's not a single article in that syllabus, and there's three textbooks, and I think like 20-odd articles, that gives an opposition to a religiously based view of the universe. That is, that science, physics, biology, cosmology give evidence for God, and in particular the Christian God. I mean, putting C.S. Lewis in a syllabus of a science class, for crying out loud,
yeah,
that's just unconscionable.
Yeah, it is. Now, I was wondering, Jerry, if you feel as uncomfortable as I do about the news that came out that Ball State University, a public university in Indiana, is set to hire a creationist for their astronomy department.
Dave says we need to take a break here. Can we save that for after the
break?
Yeah,
let's get your opinion on that next.
Okay.
So this is Free Thought Radio. Well, I wanted him to hear. It's evolution in the music.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're listening to Free Thought Radio.
And that's Pearl Jam. Sorry, I...
You stepped. That's okay. You can listen to Pearl Jam. Stay tuned. We're talking with Jerry Coyne, Why Evolution is True.
And this is Pearl Jam's Evolution.
God made the world in 7 days. Well, that's 1 week to be specific. Now, that's what I call scientific. Say hallelujah, sing its praise, creation science 101. In the beginning it begun, and you are just beginning to educate yourself when you shun evolution.
And that's Roy Zimmerman singing his song Creation Science 101, which fits in with what we're talking about.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker, and we're talking with Professor Jerry Coyne and author Jerry Coyne of the book Why Evolution is True.
And very kindly, one of FFRF's honorary directors. And you're there at the James Randi
Amazing Conference.
Amazing meeting. Cam. Right?
And we hear you're going to give religion some hell there.
Yeah, I'm not going to pull any punches.
So let's not pull any punches about the latest development at Ball State University we were talking about just before the break, where there's been a problem with a professor proselytizing instead of teaching in science. And now we get word that Ball State University is planning to hire a known creationist to teach astronomy. What is your opinion about that, Jerry Coyne?
Well, the creationist is Guillermo Gonzalez, who's quite notorious if you hang around the evolution creation debates. He was at Iowa State University as a think of physics professor, and he was also a fellow of the Discovery Institute, which is the intelligent design outfit in Seattle. And while he was at Iowa State, he engaged in publishing a book called The Privileged Planet and a movie of the same name that he worked on, which basically makes the assertion that the Earth was put in its position by God so humans could observe the universe. That is not only that, you know, life, that the parameters of physics are such that, you know, the anthropic principle that, you know, God made the laws of physics so that humans could arise, but also that we happen to have risen on Earth, which just happens to be fortuitously positioned in a place in the universe where we could study the universe most effectively.
Well, you know, to me,
yeah,
this really...
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the ultimate, you know, anthropic argument. And I've watched the movie and read part of the book. It's pretty dire, what you expect. Anyway, he didn't get tenure at ISU. They booted him out. He claimed that it was because of his work on intelligent design. The evidence is pretty strong, however, that he just failed to meet minimal standards of scholarship, did get enough grants, published enough papers, have enough students. He moved to a small religious school called Grove City College, and then Ball State hired him, I guess, not that long ago, in the same department where Eric Hayden is, physics and astronomy, which to me is a bit suspicious.
Yeah, I think so.
It's the hand of God, Jerry.
Yeah, well, the hand of the chairman.
I've been talking about this with some people who say, oh, well, you know, you could teach astronomy professionally and rationally and still hold creationist views. But the way you're describing it, you know, he's just, how can he be a good professor? How can he even understand what he's teaching if he rejects evolution and thinks that God placed the planets in a particular place for us to observe?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, Gonzalez has been quoted in the past couple of days by the Associated Press as saying he's promised Ball State that he's not going to teach intelligent design, and he better not, because he'll get in the same mess you guys put Hayden into. But, you know, you could do it if you have this sort of cognitive dissonance where you teach a naturalistic view in the class but privately believe something else. My view is that somebody that does that is not really a very good scientist,
right?
Because they're believing... But, you know, if he can, it's almost as if he's teaching what he doesn't believe to the students.
Right.
I don't think he can do that with conviction or enthusiasm, but they made this decision. If he doesn't abrogate the Constitution as a professor there, then I can't say that they should get rid of him. I just got to say it's deeply suspicious that, you know, they have these two ID guys in the same department.
Right. I mean, to me, it sends a message. It's the university in a fundamentalist state sending a message to students that, gee, we think it's fine if our quote-unquote scientists are creationists.
Yeah, it is. It's almost, at Lehigh University, where ID Michael Behe works as a biologist, the department has a disclaimer on its website saying, none of the rest of us believe in intelligent design, and maybe they'll have to do that at Ball State.
It would be
I should add something. This came out this morning, which is public record, that the job for Gonzalez's hiring, the deadline was July 1st of this year, but he appears to have been hired before the deadline, which means other people are applying when the decision had already been made to hire him, which to me is, again, suspicious that there's some cosmic hand at work here in favor of intelligent design. So, you know, the whole thing, you know...
Kind of stinks.
Yeah, it stinks like old fish to me, but... Who knows? Like, it could be just a magnificent coincidence, but it seems too much for me to accept that.
Well, in their minds, there's no such thing as coincidence. It'd be kind of like a geography professor asking the students, how do you think all those rivers were made to flow right along the state boundaries? How did that happen? It had to be designed like that.
Wouldn't it be like a geologist believing in a flat Earth?
Yeah,
you know?
It would, but then you have to teach that there's a round Earth. So I don't know how anybody can have intellectual integrity and do that.
No, I don't see how you can be a scientist and be a creationist at the same time, how you can be a good scientist.
Well, you can't. I mean, the facts are that if you look at the quality of scientists, you know, scientists and then scientists at elite universities and then scientists at the National Academy, the higher up you go, the more atheistic they become. So by the time you get to the National Academy, 92% of its members are atheists. It's about, you know, 70% of scientists at elite universities, and about 60%, or I think 40-60% of scientists in general. So the better you are as a scientist, the less you
believe
superstition. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and
I mean, this is certainly going to besmirch Ball State's reputation. I think they know that they put their foot in it, largely because of what the FFRF has done, and I don't think we're going to see much ID taught there.
I hope not. Well, listen, Jerry, you might keep an eye out for FFRF's ads that are running every month now in Scientific American.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
We ran our first one, and the next one's coming up. And we have one on Darwin and evolution. They're kind of theocracy alerts. They're the problems that we're facing because of religion in our government and in our schools. And so we'll be tackling creationism, and we're going to be talking about how elite scientists tend to be atheists in another ad, too.
So you say this is in Scientific American?
Mm-hmm. They're a third of a page color ad, so everyone can look for them.
I'll look forward to seeing that.
Yeah. And
well, that's my favorite magazine. I read that first every month.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Jerry, for joining us on short notice there. We appreciate all your activism. People can get Why Evolution is True at the bookstores, and they can look up your blog, right?
Yeah, it's just one word, Why Evolution is True, runtogether.com.
Well, thank you, Jerry.
All right, my pleasure. And you guys keep up the good work. I mean, this is basically your doing, not mine. So.
Well,
we'll thank Andrew, too.
We are all collaborating.
And Andrew, of course, yeah.
We're out of time. We want to thank our engineer, Dave McCann. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. You can sign up for the podcast at ffrf.org/news/radio.
And join us at ffrf.org. You get 10 issues a year of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, 24 to 28 pages. You can also get it as a PDF. And you can ask for a sample copy if you want to check it out before joining us. We'd appreciate your support. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join